If you're tired of dieting and stepping on the scale, you're lacking energy and confidence, and you're ready to harness your inner athlete, then you're in the right place. I'm Sherry Chaban, and in each episode, I'll help you to rebuild your fitness identity and empower your deepest transformation so that health and fitness are not just what you do, but who you are. Hi, Derek. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you for having me. It's a pleasure being here.
I'm so excited about this conversation and deep diving into some super important conversations that we're about to have today, and specifically around really the difference between surviving and thriving. Because I think in our society in general, Derek, and I think this is something you're 100% going to agree with, is that most people are just surviving. And actually, when you ask most people, hey, what's up? How are you doing? How's your day? Oh, I'm just hanging in there. I'm just getting through it. And so we have this mindset and almost are congratulated in society around this notion where we're supposed to survive, where we're supposed to almost sacrifice the pleasures and enjoyments in our life in order to get work done. And so I understand that this is your line of work, and you've actually have a beautiful background and very powerful story around why you got into this. And before I welcome you to the show, I want to thank you so much for your time and for being here. And then
I appreciate
ask you to share your story with us.
For sure. So once again, I appreciate you having me, Sherry. So quick backstory is my father was U.S. Army for 25 years. And my mother was, first off, my father's African-American. He's from the country in Starkville, Mississippi. He's a farm boy. My mother grew up a city girl in Germany. So my mother's German. My father was stationed in Germany. So that's where he met my mother. They had my sister. Years later, had me. So in second grade, that's when we left Germany and moved to Pensacola, Florida. So in the panhandle, I have various accents sometimes that come out. So Pensacola, Florida, that's where I grew up in. And throughout elementary through college, I lived throughout Florida most of my life. And then from there, I also joined the Army as well during college. So with that upbringing of both successful parents in their career, mother was a teacher for Montessori school for 40 plus years, so private school. Father was an Army officer, realtor, both successful on the outside, beautiful home, multiple bedrooms, screened in pool, the get together house for the cookouts and all that, well known in the area. Everybody knew the parents, but behind closed doors, after the last drink was drunk, whether it was with the crowd or after they left, that is when they would release their own childhood trauma or past PTSD on me, physically, verbally, emotionally, all those different ways. But I could tell that at the age of 12 is when I could see that it was not about me. So at the age 11 is when it started. And at first, you're just shocked. You're like, I'm an honor roll student, never been in trouble, just trying to do my thing, go to class and play sports. But I could see that they would look through me, not at me, as in they would see either another person or they would just like black out. And I'd notice the pattern was the next day would be like, hey, want to go have lunch at this place? Want to meet us here? As if nothing happened. But it happened so many times that I realized, I was like, you know what? This is interesting. So I went from scared, fearful, shocked, to then diving deep into psychology, the mind. And also that's what inspired me to get into coaching, because I was the skinny kid that was bullied in school. Then I would be bullied at home at night, and I just got sick and tired of being bullied by everyone. So that's what got me into fitness, to build the muscle, not so much to attack the bullies, but more so to feel and harness my body and feel the confidence. And also I was chasing the high of after a strenuous workout, physically and mentally, just that calmness that I would have. And that's when I would practice my faith. And I noticed everything was more effective. So all those dark nights of the screaming, yelling and all that and the bullying at school, I would basically have the skill of popping out of perspective to look at myself as a child or as a teen to stay calm in those situations. So I feel like all those things aligned with why I do what I do now, but also being able to help empower people. I always enjoyed seeing somebody that was either not having someone in their life that was listening to them, giving them the lending ear, giving them a piece of advice, or building them up through fitness. So basically, the words I love you were not said in our home. So that's why I would show a lot of love to my classmates, teammates in sports and all that. So always showing up to others, even if they weren't a personal training client when I was a teen or in college, but just always being there for others. But I feel like everything comes full circle that way. People that make a big impact, they usually have a wild backstory.
Thank you so much for that beautiful share and for being so vulnerable and open. And It's so clear
No
that
problem.
you've used fitness to really almost use it as an outlet to what happened and just to really release a lot of
Yes.
these emotions and these entrapped emotions and feelings that you grew up with. But I'm super curious, if we were to go back at that moment as a child, I would imagine it must have been so incredibly confusing to kind of almost feel two different types of energies from your parents. There was a moment of uncertainty and fear and doubt and really not feeling a significance around them. And then I would imagine there were other moments where you did receive the love and you did receive the attention. And so what was like that for you, just being in that environment of turbulence and uncertainty growing up?
For sure. So I think that they also trained me for it, not like on purpose, but trained me for it as in the discipline was second nature in our home. So both parents would be awake at 4 or 5 a.m. My dad was army. So I'd see him up running, heading to the gym or formation. My mother would be up early doing Billy Blanks, Tybo tapes in the living room, Body by Jake, pool workouts. So she'd be up early doing all those tapes and DVDs. And it was just natural, like 6 days a week, that's what I would see. So children, we do as we see, not what we're told. So I saw them up early and working out. So, hey, I got up early and worked out. So the discipline, the routine, the structure was all there. The military side, the German gung-ho professionalism side, but the attention, love, affection, and all that really wasn't there. It was more so work hard, success, help other people. But when it came to the actual like family dinners, it was always really awkward. But with that being said, I feel like the gift was being able to read them, read a room, and then also being able to realize that what I'm lacking here, I have to learn how to give others. Not as in trying to cope, as in trying to be like a yes man or a people pleaser, but more so like being able to help others see their greatness within them. Because even though the house was beautiful from the outside and the inside, it never felt to me like a home. So I enjoy being at school more, being at basketball practice, being at martial arts, to always be around others. Because that was like my escape of reality, because I didn't use a vice of drugs, alcohol, anything like that. My vice in a positive way was fitness. So while those things were happening, I realized that I fell in love with the high and the mental calmness of a very effective workout, whether it was running, weights, anything of that nature, to prepare myself for the dark night. And then when the yelling, screaming, and all that was happening, I could just zone out and I'd almost like feel like a therapeutic moment. I don't know where it came from, excuse me, but the older I got, I realized that I was doing a lot of shadow work, a lot of psychology. I realized like all the stuff that I was doing, I created an alter ego. I did all this stuff and I didn't even know what it was. I was 11 and 12. And then when I got 15 and 16, I started listening to Tony Robbins, Les Brown, reading books, Napoleon Hill, and all the stuff started to connect. And I was like, wow, I've been doing this perspective hopping, alter ego, looking from the outside at my current self. Like I was doing all that somehow on autopilot rather than just like screaming, crying, running away, or going to school to start violence. So I feel like that sense of calmness and discernment was a cheat code, but I would always see it as I wasn't angry really at my parents. It was more so I felt bad for them because I didn't really know what all happened. I knew they had specific family trauma and all that, but I knew that it was something deeper and it wasn't about me. So it more so inspired me. At first it was dark, and then it inspired me to learn about the mind, learn about the body, and then also say, you know what? I have the ability to change the family trajectory, the family tree, where alcoholism, drugs, or any of that stops with me. And then if my girlfriend and I plan to have kids or anything like that, then that love and affection would be there, plus the discipline. There won't be like a missing link or anything. Right. But yeah, so the calmness from the fitness, also the perspective hopping, and then also realizing that instead of being angry that they weren't giving me the love and affection, I did see key examples of that with my friends' families. So when I was a kid going to cookouts or to sleepovers, I'd be shocked. I'm like, you guys have dinner together? You guys say, I love you? This is crazy. It's like a TV show family. Because I just didn't know what that was. So seeing it, I was like, you know what? There's proof of how it is. And I have proof of what hard work is. Now let me see if I can put these two things together.
Wow. Wow. That's so incredibly powerful. And I just want to sit in this for a moment because I heard you say so many profound things. And one of the things that you said is, kids don't do what we say, they do what we do. And so it just piques my curiosity why a child such as you grows up in this environment where there is a lot of chaos in the household, there's a lot of fear, there's a lot of uncertainty, you're watching your parents engage in certain behavior that makes you feel unsafe. And yet, by the time you're a teenager, you've already found Napoleon Hill, you've already found Tony Robbins, you're already getting into the personal development world, and you've already decided, I am not a victim of the circumstance. In fact, I have empathy for them. I can hold space for what they're going through. And what I've decided is, there actually is proof. I see that there is proof of a different type of behavior that I am attracted to, that I want to move towards, and maybe even share this with my kids one day in the future. So it's super curious. Oh, yes. Because, Derek, how many people grow up in an environment like that and then end up just falling into the same pattern, right? We all become a victim of whatever our environment is most of the time, unless we are conscious, unless we are aware. So at a young age, how did you harness this level of awareness?
I think it was, I got obsessed with learning about dark stories, not like horror stories or all that, but darker stories of individuals that went through things worse. And I would learn about these stories in biographies, autobiographies, documentaries, music, talking to people that I knew in person. So like, I would tell myself, you're not allowed to complain. And so like, even my best friends didn't know what was happening at home because my parents were very popular. I was like, I'm not going to tarnish their reputation because they would be up 365 days a year, the best at what they do. So it didn't affect their personal or social life at all. So I said, I'm not going to tarnish that. I'm not going to be the attention kid that's just going to complain. And I was like, that's not in my nature. But what I did, I got obsessed with movies. So like an example, I would watch Rocky for motivation for fitness. I would watch 8 Mile because my relationship with my mother was pretty similar to Eminem and his mom. Not like that many drugs, but just in general, I would absorb all this information and then I would see their story and then I would see their success and how they impacted people. And I said, he makes me feel this from this movie. She makes me feel this from this song. He makes me feel this from when he spoke on stage. This book I'm reading makes me feel this. This preacher that spoke to me when I went to church. So all the people that I was learning from, whether I knew them digitally via book or whatever, everyone went through things way worse than me. So I never said I can complain because I thought about this. I have multiple rooms I could sleep in. We have air conditioner. We have food. I actually have both parents. I had plenty of friends that didn't even know who their parents were. So I was like, I have way more to be grateful for than to complain. And then I got obsessed with darker stories, but more so the comeback story, because every human, the only reason we like stories or movies is because of the comeback story. Everybody can respect it. Even if we don't like the individual, once we learn about them, we're like, wow, don't even listen to his music, but that's amazing. Like, he made it to the top. She made it in the top in her field. So comeback stories always inspired me. And because it drove, one, my workouts, but also the high that I would learn from that, I would say my situation is not that bad. And then I would show it better for others. And another thing that helped me as a child is I was the quiet kid and I would go to all the cookouts and everything. And I'd be the DD for my parents. Like, even before I had my license, they're like, you're going to drive us home. I was like, cool. So I'd go to all these places with them and I would just read the room. And I was a quiet kid and they're all just drinking and talking. And I was like, all right, this is interesting. They walked out of the room. They all talked about them, but they're all best friends. I'm like, this is weird. And then this happened. And then like, I would just read. I wasn't judging. I was just like, notice all these patterns in people. I'm like, all right, he has a mansion, but he does a ton of drugs. He's had 5 divorces, like just all these different things with their friends. I'm like, they all have things in common that they're like neglecting a huge part of their life. And then I was like, this is interesting. I see success. I see hard work, but everything else, I don't see proof that you guys have done it. But I more so saw like a author about to write a book. I've never written a book, but I was just in that headspace, just absorbing the information. And then from there, I would see examples of people that I met via school, via my friends, that did have the other traits that the others were lacking. And then I would put 2 and 2 together and say, okay, I'm not fully going to listen to this person because they don't have every area that I want, but they are correct on this. Now, this person, they might not have XYZ, which I'm thriving for, but they listen when I'm actually speaking. They're not zoned out or telling me to shut up. So I would just take in all these different pieces and put it together and say, okay, I'm harnessing this individual with these traits that I want to have. And going back to discernment, I feel like discernment and perspective hopping was just a gift that I had, because I could pause while the drama was happening, zoom out, look at my current self, and then look at the perspective of my younger self to say, hey, we used to be scared. Now we're calm. Now they're more angry because I'm not given a reaction. I'm just blank. And then I would think of my future self and say, ooh, this would be a cool story to tell. Like, I would do all this in the moment and I didn't know what was happening. But when I learned about it, it was interesting. So definitely learning stories of individuals that went through things worse, being grateful, building my faith, And then most importantly, training the body to have a stronger mind, to tell myself, I'm no longer allowing anyone else to have control of my attitude or my emotions. So once I made that decision and promised to myself, I said, I'm not going to give people the reaction they expect anymore. And I want to say I was 16 when I did that, because I remember clear as day that my mother was like screaming, doing her usual thing. And I just had a blank face. And out of nowhere, I just busted out laughing. And I didn't even plan it. And I was like, well, I'm not trying to laugh in her face, but just like a natural instinct, because my body was like, whoa, you're not even affected. And I think it was like my subconscious laughing, like, I don't know what just shifted, but this is not affecting me anymore. And from that day, I would just look blank, and then I would just agree. So I would agree to the bully at school. I would agree to the races in the South in America. I was like, yeah, you're right. And I would just smile, and people would be caught off guard. And I was like, this is interesting. I'm literally playing chess with my words, but not being violent, not being aggressive. And most importantly, I was like, I'm actually not wasting energy, because I used to hold this anger and I used to hold this sadness. I used to hold all this stuff and say, I'm just going to work out hard and go into a dark space. And that works to an extent. But after a while, you're like, I got an 18-hour day. I can't be in this dark zone. It helps during a workout, but right. Outside of that, it didn't. Right. But yeah, so those are definitely some things that I did.
Wow. You are so incredibly interesting. This is so incredibly fascinating. And a couple more skills I noticed that you shared also is that you look for patterns. And so with people, I noticed that you're looking for a lot of patterns, and you're also almost non-judgmentally observing. So you're almost as an experiencer of the moment, you're sort of observing everybody and without judgment saying this is right or wrong or this is good or bad, except that you're just noticing that there's all these different areas of life. And it seems like this person has mastered these areas, but still needs maybe work on this. And I don't have to either decide that this person is good or bad or can give me good or bad advice, but I can definitely learn from something here and I can take away from something. And so that's incredibly powerful. And then the other thing I noticed too is that you almost have the sense of non-attachment, that you don't actually have expectations of maybe particular people or particular situations, but you're just, again, as the observer, just noticing what's going on and how they're communicating with each other. And this is incredibly powerful. And yet I will have to say, Derek, I feel that we all have this darkness inside. We all have these hard moments. And, oh, yes. And I think we all come across it where now stories from our past start coming up and there are thoughts in our mind that are reflecting maybe of something completely different than what our current self-image is. So I'm super curious, because right now we're hearing you and you're the super badass who's young and at a, such a young age picking up these personal development books that people in their 40s are just maybe not even encountering just yet. And so this is incredibly profound. And so we all have these moments, and I fall back onto these moments sometimes where things are going super great and all of a sudden I'll have this hiccup and I'm in a space of darkness and it takes a moment just to recollect and center myself again. But share with us maybe when you come across these moments, if you do, how often you do, and what you do to overcome.
Yes, I 100% do. And it's, excuse me, it's more so, I would say, world related, family related, or client related, as in it's always around me. It's not necessarily like my life individually, like my dog, my girlfriend, and my space, but it's more so people in my life. It feels like they always have something going on, not saying they're negative people, but I've just always been the friend, the coach, the person that people would pour into. Yeah. So that's why I'm always up at 4 to take care of this and this, because I know something is going to happen this week, something traumatic to somebody in my life, and they're going to need me. So the number one thing I tell myself in my head and out loud, people depend on me. So my first hour to 2 hours of the morning is all about me, or I might take my dog out. But besides that, it's about my body. I run or I hit the weights. And then from there, I'll just do something mentally, whether that's prayer, meditation, visualization, breath work, things of that nature. But I'll only choose two, one for the body, one for the mind. And then from there, I just start the day. And then like I could wake up from sleep paralysis. I could wake up from a nightmare. I could wake up feeling whatever negative energy. And within an hour to two, I'm excited about life. I'm a different person. I go into the meeting. I get on a Zoom call with a client. And they're like, man, your energy is great today. And in my head, I'm laughing. I'm like, you don't know where I was 2 hours ago. Like I was in this dark hole. But it's more so now that I don't allow myself to stay in that zone.
Yes.
So something that I do with friends, clients, and anybody I talk to, I say, I challenge you to ask yourself, how long will I allow myself to be in this state? Sadness, depression, anger, anxiety. And you can give yourself a time limit. Maybe it's 1 hour. Maybe it's 10 minutes. Maybe it's 2 minutes because you got to get on a call soon and you don't have time to cancel last minute. So I'm bringing that up because I allow myself to be human. Mm-hmm. And I actually got that phrase, it's okay to be human, from my English composition teacher senior year. This is a few weeks before high school graduation. I had an RTC scholarship, other scholarships, just everything was coming together. I saw my path and then had some dark stuff happening in regards to somebody threatening a girlfriend at the time, mother, blah, blah. If you don't want to be with me, I'm going to make up a story that you raped me. So you end up in jail and blah, like just all this wild stuff. And I never saw any of this. And I was like, I'm about to lose everything. I'm about to go to prison from some fabricated story just because I want to focus on school. So with all this going on personally and then family, my English composition teacher, he saw me in the classroom. He was like, hey, Derek, let's step in the hallway. And everybody's just writing and stuff. And he realized that I was always good at expressing myself, writing. And I'd always kind of go off topic on what he wanted us to write about. And he's like, man, you put a lot of heart and passion into this. And I said, hey, writing is my thing. I don't draw, but I express. And then we're in the hallway and he's just like, I just want to tell you something. I said, yes, sir. He's like, it's okay to be human. I just looked at him like, and he looked me in my eyes again and said, it's okay to be human. And I was 17 at the time. I literally buckled at my knees and cried in this man's arms for 5 minutes straight. And like, I think I held in tears for 10 years straight because I never cried in my room when that stuff was happening. I never did anything, but I was always showing up for others and it was amazing. And I was like, wow. So it always stuck with me. So I say that sometimes to myself, and especially coming from the alpha male drill sergeant mentality and household, I would tell people, male and female, it's okay to be human sometimes, because that pent up energy that you would hold is one day going to get released and exploded on someone in a dark way. And it could have injury to them, injury to you, jail, embarrassment, many things could happen. So I would just look at it like that, as allowing yourself to release, to have that sense of calmness and not allowing somebody else to have control of your reactions or attitude.
So good. So good. And also giving yourself permission to mess up, giving yourself permission to be sloppy, giving yourself permission to do all the things that you're always holding yourself so highly to. And I think that's so incredibly important, to give ourselves grace and to realize we're not machines. We are not robots. And part of being human is that emotional part and expressing the emotions and being okay to be vulnerable and being okay to say, I need help, being okay to say, hey, I'm not okay right now. And I think a lot of us have a hard time expressing that, and especially seeking out help. And, you know, super interesting, because you said that most of your issues come from other people, come from sort of outside yourself. And that's kind of true, because if you think about all of our problems in the world, all of our problems are interpersonal problems. All of our problems have to do with somebody else, right? If we just had dogs and we had nature and, you know, we're single and we didn't have to deal with relationships, even if that was, you know, non-intimate relationships, then really life would be so easy and so simple, and we wouldn't have all of these problems, right? But I'm super curious as a coach, because something you keep saying, and it's almost like a mantra that you've repeated now a couple of times, you said, I am responsible for people. People depend on me. People count on me. And so that puts a lot of pressure, I would imagine, on you as a person to make sure that everyone else is okay. So I see why you would need to fill your own cup first, make sure that you're okay. You're always operating out of a full cup to help and serve others. But how do you get your downtime? How do you recharge your battery? Because in this place where you are an empath, and I can tell you're a massive empath, you're so incredibly understanding of other people's situations, you're able to see their perspective, and you're able to meet and match how they feel. But how do you guard your own energy so that you don't become depleted?
I spend a lot of time in nature, number one. More time in nature and being able to be present. So I use every app that exists. I use all these tools just like anyone else that works online, but I spend time in nature, whether it's just me, whether it's me and my girlfriend, or just me and my dog. But I actually just sit and I just follow whatever I see: a wave, a cloud, a bird, a squirrel, a lizard, an iguana, like whatever is there, I'm going to stare at for like 5 minutes until I just go blank. And then I try to use all my senses to take in what's around. So going back to the old school present, releasing that inner child that's just like staring at the clouds laying in the front yard. Like, I will do stuff like this because it makes me present, because I wouldn't say that we get lost in these apps, but sometimes you just lose the present moment because you're so driven into success. So a thing that I used to do really bad, like 7 years ago, was the age thing. By age this, you have to accomplish that. By age this, you have to do that. If not, you're not going to be on your trajectory to your level of success. And like, I would do this extremely. And nobody knew except my girlfriend. She's like, what are you doing? It was just in my head. And when I stopped doing that, it's like the doors of opportunities just open and I use less energy. Like, I still grind hard and all that, but it didn't seem as forced. Like, everything started to flow together as it should. And it was interesting what happened, because I was like, wow, I was hitting my head against the wall aggressively. And then I realized, I was like, okay, I released that version interacting with people, but that version would try to pop up for me personally when I try to get to the next level in life or success, where I get annoyed with myself the same way I used to get annoyed with people. So I'm like, okay, I mastered this where people don't really throw me off. Now I'm like, now it's just this. Now what happens when I fully get rid of that and I can just feel like I'm flying? So one would be nature. Two would be comedy. So I watch a lot of funny stuff or just random stuff. I said to my girlfriend, I'm like, I just need some mind-numbing stuff. Like, I'll just watch prank videos for 20 minutes on YouTube, because I speak to people all day long about real topics, dark things, where I'm like, I just need to laugh at some random skits and just to tap out real quick, or pet my dog. So nature, laughter, and last but not least would be to travel and have new experiences, whether that's 2 hours from us, whether that's a flight somewhere, new foods. Just be open and be fully present. But everything ties back to being present. I'm present in the laughter, I'm present with nature, or I'm present enjoying a new dish, talking to the server, seeing the guy pour the thing, and seeing somebody else passionate about what they're doing. That really excites me and grounds me, rather than just like sitting or laying on the couch. That's fine, but it doesn't like recharge me really. I'd rather have an experience that makes me feel more present, because when I'm on the couch, my brain doesn't stop. So everybody has their thing, but the couch doesn't really help that.
So good. We're a lot alike, by the way. So all of the things that you said are the tools that I use too. I don't ever watch anything so dramatic and people are dying of cancer and all these shows that are so serious, because that is my real world. And I actually, it's interesting what you're saying, because I've been the last few years really, really just making a conscious effort daily to get into the flow of life. And similar to you, I have a morning routine. That's where I ground myself. I actually now insert it throughout my days, especially after just a very, very turbulent conversation or moment, and when I really feel like I need to recenter myself. But I try to stay in the flow of life. And oftentimes that does mean that I have to retract for a moment and just take some time to myself. And so because I'm so giving throughout the day, my energy is so incredibly giving. It's about serving. It's always about others. It's always about doing as much as I possibly can to serve. I feel very depleted. So by the end of the day, I need a moment to myself. And oftentimes that really means just drawing my senses within. And I'm actually extroverted introvert. So I don't know if you can relate to that, but I'll kind of hang out with the people that are very close to me. So that's really my kids, my family, like super, super tight, close knit sort of relationships. And then nature, and then my dogs. And then that's when I feel super charged. And I'm curious from your perspective, for others that are constantly on, and not just on serving others or speaking to other people or just being at work, but then coming on, and to your point, getting on social media and being on, and then watching TV, and then you're on and you're constantly stimulated, not really realizing how much you're being stimulated all day. Do you feel that even though they take a moment to themselves, whatever that means, do you feel that it can be useful if they are actually able to remove themselves fully from connecting with people or connecting with social media or connecting with other devices than if they were perhaps to engage in a different activity? What would you say could help people the most really recharge that battery?
I would say there's two perspectives. Perspective one, I didn't mention this earlier, but I have total flow state when I'm having a powerful conversation with someone, with the client, with whoever. And it usually happens when I don't feel like doing the call. Those are usually the most impactful ones. And afterwards, I'm like, I don't even know where any of that came from. Like, because I don't really sleep much, and it'll be the last call where I'm like this close to sending a message. Can we do tomorrow? But I never do it. And then when I get on the call, they're always needing something in a good way. And I'm diving deep on that. But afterwards, I just feel calmness, because I'm like, wow, I was present, like my body and everything on the call, but my mind was like not even there, and something just flowed. Mm-hmm. And then I realized, I'm like, wow, that's actually what I needed. Even though I wanted to lay down or rest or chill, what I actually needed was to just be in flow with somebody. And then afterwards, they're like, wow, that really helped me save my life, this and this, where I'm not going to drink anymore. And then I think, I'm like, all I had to do was show up to one more. And it wasn't necessarily that I did it on purpose to show up for that, but we had it booked, and it goes back to the people depend on me. So that's one, is empowering conversations, because 99% of conversations are just straight fluff. And most people, they don't even listen anyway, because they're just on their phone. They're like, oh, yeah, you know, I'm listening. Oh, yeah, no, you said something about work and then blah. And you're like, that's why I'd rather talk to my dog than most of you. But that's what a lot of people feel, is most people don't actively listen. So I would say one, flow state from actively listening to somebody and guiding them. And then the other perspective could be, okay, do we have too much social interaction? Maybe they just need some time alone because they're instantly just getting endorphin hits from these apps. And it's also a vice to some people because right when they're about to think of what they need to work on, oh, I need to grab this. Right. So everybody has a pattern. They grab Instagram, then they go to TikTok, then they go to YouTube, then they check their Gmail. Like everybody has a particular order that they do between downtime or when they're about to face whatever they need to face. And they're like, I'm going to push that back in the closet or under the rug. I'll get around to it. Then they start endorphin searching on their phone or whatever's going on. But I bring up the two perspectives. One, this person needs less endorphins. It just needs to sit with whatever they need to sit with. This person, they just need to have a meaningful conversation because maybe they don't use social media that much and it doesn't really affect them, but they just need that connection. So like during COVID and quarantine, I noticed people missed the connection part because I was working a ton during quarantine because people didn't know what to do at home with fitness or mindset. Alcoholism skyrocketed, spousal abuse skyrocketed, drug, like all this stuff skyrocketed. And I was like, wow, this is the perfect time to really dive deep because by the time the doors open to the world again, quote unquote, they could be new people while everybody else has eating disorders and a ton of issues because they didn't work on themselves. These people are going to thrive. And I felt like there's two ways. So going back to the question is one person, they just need meaningful, deep conversations with no intent to get anything out of it. It could be with a stranger in the Publix, Target, whatever store somebody shops in. It could just be a 10-minute conversation with that person. They're like, wow, I needed this. And then the other person, let me lay these devices down, turn the TV off. Let me just sit in whatever's here. Because usually in that moment when they sit, if they need a release or if they just sit in silence, that's when an idea comes to them. A sign, a quote, something from God, the ancestors, Allah, the universe, whatever they believe in, something happens in those moments. So people are missing the stillness and people are missing the connection because everything else is just like, share, laugh, share, TikTok. They're like all over the place. So presence and meaningful conversation.
So good. I love that. I actually watched a movie recently on Netflix. I don't remember really what it was called, but it was really talking about exactly what you just shared. And there is this guy who just got a new phone and all of a sudden his phone now, the AI has completely taken over. It's got his, all his social media accounts. It's got his bank accounts. And the goal of this AI version of Siri is to help him improve his life. And so it's super interesting because so many hidden messages in this movie and how, for example, many people living this fake life, how they want people to see them on Instagram, but it's not really reflective of what's actually going on, really completely engaged in social media instead of actually connecting with their loved ones. And so you see this often, people at a restaurant, four people sitting at a table, everybody's on their phone, they're not connecting anymore. Or right before bed, you're watching your something on your phone, you're always connecting to something. And really, I don't know about you, but there are moments where I've even left my house and felt like completely naked because I forgot my phone and I had to go back and get it. And so we don't even realize that we're addicted to this. We don't even realize just how much presence and connection we have actually put on our phones and realize it actually feeds that sense of and that need for connection and love that we actually should be getting from other people or should be getting from nature or our pets or people around us who are lighting us up, right?
Exactly. And looking at social media that way is powerful because people can look at their screen time. How many hours or minutes am I on these apps or on my screen in general? And then on the flip side, what I'll tell a lot of my clients, especially that have passions to get out there, I say, create more, consume less. Create more, consume less. So my friends are like, dude, you're on social media all day. And I say, no, I just post my thought. I'm walking my dog. I record something. I was like, I post and I get off. So it looks like I'm on it a lot, but I'm not absorbing anything unless I'm intentional. And I'm like, I just want to see house inspiration. And I go to one of those Instagram house pages and I'm like, wow, that's beautiful. Inspiration. Okay, back to work. So I'm very intentional about what I open and who I follow. So like Instagram is my favorite. I don't see anything negative. Facebook, I don't even look at. I just post because it's just going to be my high school friends arguing about whatever. And I'm just like, I post to make you think. I post to inspire you and then I get off. But my intent and my challenge with people with social media is I challenge everyone to be more authentic, as in having no filter and being themselves online. And someone will say, well, I can't say this because of this career. And I would just say, look, you're not here to offend people, but speak your mind, share your struggles, share your life experience, and then just watch what happens. Somebody's going to message you, comment, and say, hey, I never knew you went through this, or thank you for posting that. And that is the social part of social media that has been missing, but I feel like it's coming full circle again because of podcasts, interviews, YouTube videos, like because people are slowly telling their stories And when people are looking at these devices, they're connecting and learning, which is definitely the positive about it. And that's what I love about it. So going back to the individual that might not physically be close to people to have the meaningful conversations, they could actually trigger and start the conversation by sharing something vulnerable to the world. One, it feels good to release. Two, somebody else might need it. Three, the after fact and the aftermath and the effect is a meaningful conversation, which might just be through Messenger, but still, they feel good. They're like, wow, let me screenshot these messages. This is powerful. It wasn't just about Kim K and Kanye and Trump. It was about, hey, I relate to this. You did too. And just going back and forth. And both people are like, we don't even know each other, but we just connected on this because I related to the story only because they posted. And an hour ago, they're like, nobody's going to post this. My family's going to see this. They're going to think I'm weird. But if they're just authentically themselves and listen to what their conscience says to post, just get it out there.
I love that. I love that. And I love that you bring that up, that it actually can be a positive perspective and it all depends on how we use it. And I use social media for my business and it's been amazing to reach out to people who connect with the message that I'm sharing. And at the same time, I have to also be mindful and audit my time on social media because at the end of the day, it's part of our diet, right? Our diet is not just what we're eating and what we're drinking. Our diet is everything we're consuming, including information that gives us a particular emotion, whether that's fear or uncertainty or makes us angry or really creates us the sense of reaction in a way where we're constantly seeking the likes and the comments and all of the attention and significance we're feeling and we're receiving from social media. So, so powerful. So Derek, I've loved this conversation so much and I really wish we could keep talking for an hour. And so I actually want to ask you maybe one last question around how, in your own words, do we get from that place of survival to thriving? How does a person do that? So let's say if there was a way for you to summarize it and to really start to audit certain areas of your life, how do we step into that place of empowerment and not surviving any longer?
For sure. I would challenge people to think of an analogy to say, what can I do to become the man or the woman that I would be proud of? And then how can I give that individual to the world? What can I do to become the man or woman that I would be proud of? And how could I give them to the world? So if it's drinking and their conscience is like, drink less, smoke less, spend less time on social media, everything goes back to conscious congruency. So whatever our conscience is guiding us to do, it starts with the smallest things. They open up the fridge after they listen to this, or if they see this, what do they grab? They're in the grocery store. What do they buy? They open up Uber Eats. Is it because they're stressed or because they're excited to actually get Uber Eats? So all those key moments, those decisions are usually what give someone power or derail them, because then the next day they're in their head. So I would challenge people to focus on the smallest things, those micro decisions, because the micro decisions, those are the ones that really eat at us. The big past trauma and all that, that has a lot of weight, but it's usually because we let ourselves down for 30 days straight because we chose the wrong food, wasted too much time on social. But I would focus on the smallest things. So what do you need to do to get closer to that person that you would be proud of? And then how can you give them to someone else? Because nobody just wants to have all this knowledge and experience and not tell anybody because that person's miserable. Mm-hmm. But if you do share it, that's when you have that connection. So that would be a takeaway that I would leave, is how do you create that man or woman that you'd be proud of and give it to others?
So good. So good. So good. And through giving, we receive. And so I love that we're ending it this way. And what a powerful, beautiful statement to share with the world. And I couldn't agree more. Really, if we want to receive more of something, we have to first ask ourselves, how much am I even giving that to others? If I want more love and attention and affection, am I giving that to my partner? If I want more people to actually see what I'm doing, am I seeing others for their actions too? So, so incredibly beautiful. And Derek, as we conclude our conversation here today, is there anything else that you wanted to share that you didn't have a chance to do just yet?
I would just say, if anybody would like to get connected, they can find me on any social media app at fitwithderek2, the number 2, or my coaching website is fitwithderek.com. And full transparency, I'm not for everyone, you're not for everyone, but if you guys like drill sergeant mentalities, then hey, and open perspectives, I might be the one. If not, hey, my whole intent is inspire people and make them think. But I just like to put that out there. My intent is to plant seeds. So when somebody's about to skip their workout, about to pick up that bottle, and they're like, I watched that guy's video earlier. You know what? He called me out in that video. That's what I like to do. Plant that seed.
I love that so much. And thank you so much. So many beautiful golden nuggets here today. So much value. And we will definitely put all of those links in the show notes for people to reach out and connect with you. Thank you again so much, Derek, for your
time. I appreciate you having me, Sherry.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Fall in Love with Fitness. Whether you're already on your fitness journey or just getting started, we're in this together. Just head on over to iTunes, subscribe, and leave a review, and you'll be entered into the drawing to win my 6-week transformation course. Then go to fallinlovewithfitness.com and get your free gift from me so you get back your energy and reinvigorate your life. Join me on the next episode, and remember, you are an inspiration.